for LBW. Oh, he's got him. That's well run, or is it? Oh, well fielded. That's out. That's got to be out. That's beautifully done.
What a great effort. That's unbelievable. That is sensational.
Now, this will be interesting.
Short, fine legs.
Hey, welcome to Short, Fine Legs, South Africa's premium cricket podcast, which is now proudly brought to you by Orcor, Africa's favourite auctioneers. Orcor are the biggest hitters in online and live auctions, featuring the best brands in luxury and budget vehicles and trucks, as well as furniture, appliances and gadgets for your home and office. The Orcor team are also the biggest cricket fans out there, so naturally we're quite big fans of them too. Visit their website, www.orcor.com, or follow them on social media so you're kept up to date with their latest auctions. Who is the most influential cricketer in South African history? Let's exclude the dark, exclusive days during apartheid and focus instead on the modern era. Is it Graham Smith, the behemoth captain who took the Proteas to the top of the test rankings? What about Lance Klusener, who almost single-handedly won a World Cup on his own, but whose meltdown against Australia began a decades-long choking curse? What about a couple of all-time greats like Jacques Cullis, Dale Steyn, Abe de Villiers and Hashim Amla, who in their own way helped alleviate the pervasive sense of insecurity that all Proteas fans have felt at one time or another? Perhaps it's Mekhi Ntini, who became the first black African to don his nation's colours. I'd like to put forward the name of Paul Adams. A chubby kid with an action plucked from a Jackson Pollock painting, was so different, was so unlike anything anyone had ever seen before, that he challenged long-held views on what was permissible on a cricket field. He made it look fun. He challenged the stereotypes that this antiquated game was a game for old, stuffy English people half a world away. I'm Daniel Gallen, and on the last episode of Short Fine Legs, I explained why Paul Adams was the embodiment of Nelson Mandela's project to create a new South Africa, replete with a seven-coloured flag and filled with hope and promise.
Remember, it was 1994, 1995.
That's Zahir Adams, a respected journalist who grew up with Paul in Grassy Park in Cape Town and followed his career.
South Africa just returned from apartheid, from international cricket. The mainstream media, which majority... still the traditional media that had covered South African cricket all the years, and suddenly they were exposed to something quite unique that they hadn't seen before, and I don't think everybody was quite ready for what Paul brought to the table.
But there was no denying his immediate impact. He picked up 4 wickets in each of his first 3 tests, and then got 8, including a first inning 6-for against India in Kanpur. When India came to South Africa, he got 5 in Cape Town and then another 4 in Johannesburg. Then Australia arrived. A team of world beaters who had a certain Shane Warne in the side, the greatest ever wrist spinner, and a man whose genius was only matched by his bravado. But did South Africa finally have a spinner who could fight fire with fire?
Yeah, he was setting the benchmark. Shane Warne is just phenomenal.
That's from Paul himself.
Wherever Shane Warne will play against him, even our own teammates will compare. Come on, you look at what he's doing. You got to do it.
When Australia touched down in South Africa in early 1997, Paul had played just 7 tests. He made his debut in late 1995, having played just 6 first-class games. Now he was tasked with the challenge of replicating arguably the greatest ever bowler the sport has ever seen. That would be a difficult enough task for a veteran, unburdened by what he meant to a country still recovering from the trauma of apartheid.
So Africans thought they had found their Shane Warne. That was a very, very unfair comparison. And Paul kind of took it on personally. He took it on as he believed it and he wanted to be Shane Warne. Where his strike rate was far beyond anything that any South African spinner had already achieved. He was by far he was up there going to chase Hugh Tayfield, and that would have been a feat and a landmark to be the best South African spinner ever and beat Hugh Tayfield. But that wasn't the case. It was always about beating Shane Warne and being better than Shane Warne and being South Africa's Shane Warne. Where it was a crazy period where even throughout their test matches, Paul would bait Shane and Shane would have a go at him. And, you know, and there was this ridiculous incident where in P in 1997, where Paul wanted to reverse sweep Shane and lost his wicket.
It really is worth searching that out on YouTube, actually. Robelinda has labelled it piss funny, which is a little harsh, I think. But it shows Adams wind up an agricultural reverse sweep that he gloves to the man at slip. Warren cackles maniacally, forcing a belly laugh. Of course, the dismissal is objectively humorous in the way that all sports gaffes are. But Warren seems to be laughing at Adams, reveling in his failure. It's as if he's saying, "You really think you're as good as me?" No matter. Paul took heart from simply going toe-to-toe with a giant. And Warren wasn't the only one. The late 90s was littered with world-class spinners. Sri Lanka's Muthiah Muralitharan, Pakistan's Mushtaq Ahmed, India's Anil Kumble, and New Zealand's Daniel Vittori.
Well, I've connected with a lot of those spinners in that era as well. Mm. Just talking about the game and make sure that, yeah, you just... be as humble as you can be and learn, you know. So those guys were really inspirational as a young spinner coming into international cricket.
As important as tricks and flicks are, a spinner's relationship with his captain can make or break him. And Paul was fortunate to have a skipper who knew how to get the best out of him.
He developed this strong relationship with Hansie Cronje, who was the captain at the time. And Hansie kind of, you talk about putting your shoulder around him, and Hansie kind of put his shoulder around Paul and said, you know, I will look after you. Hansie was a little bit ahead of his time in the way he managed Paul. He would always bring Paul on immediately after a wicket fell. You know, if there was pressure, he'd bring Paul on. He'd never bowl him with Alan Donald, funnily enough. It was always, you use Paul as a strike bowler and said, you know what, you go and take wickets for us. Don't try and contain runs and in that way the South African never leaked runs both sides. And that was quite admirable from Hansie to take in this kid and really guide him through those first years of international cricket.
With a few games under his belt, Adams grew in confidence. But as his remarkable action became more recognizable, at least to those of us not tasked with having to face him, a narrative developed. Somehow that the mystery had waned. That batters had started to pick him, that maybe this frog in a blender was merely a flash in the pan.
Yeah, I think that's a bit harsh in saying that the mystery disappeared. I think it took 9 or 10 years for it to disappear. If it did disappear and people took that long, you can't really say that. If it was something of a mystery, the next season would have been odd to do it, you know, and to have taken over 400-odd first-class wickets, it's not just a flash in the pan and play 121 first-class games. So it's a bit harsh saying that. For me, it was, a lot of people had different ways, different thinkings. Maybe they just didn't understand because my action was so very different or didn't understand me. They look for words.
Either way, certain theories calcified into facts. And Adams was pigeonholed as an effective red ball bowler, but a liability in white ball cricket. He played 45 tests for South Africa, but only 24 one days. It's strange to think that someone branded a mystery wrist spinner would be cast in this light, especially when one considers that the likes of Imran Tahir, Adil Rashid, Rashid Khan and their ilk are hot commodities in the global franchise circuit.
I think it was the era where there was white ball cricket was seen differently at what it is now in the world. And, you know, it was all about just containing, doing certain things. And my record still was very good at it. Then they were looking at guys who could do batting as well. And, I felt I was a bit unfairly done with when it came to the white ball game. And also boxed into that. If I grew up in an era now, I'd probably be more of a white ball specialist than the red ball.
When England visited in 2000, Adams had taken 83 wickets from 26 tests in 7 countries. He was finally on course to join that pantheon of great spinners of the era. But in that final test against England in Centurion, the one in which Hansi Kronje had orchestrated a contest from a rain-affected match in exchange for money, Adams collided with an advertising board near the boundary. His bowling hand got stuck at an awkward angle and his middle finger dislocated.
Looked at my hand and I called one of our teammates, Peter Stratum, over and I said, look at my hand, something wrong with my finger. It was pointing the other way and he said, just get straight up to the physio. And I just sprinted straight up. And that was, yeah, dislocation to my left hand, the middle finger. And that kept me out for quite a bit.
While his teammates were on tour to India later that year, Adams learned to bowl with a new grip. He had sustained nerve damage in the accident, and his fingers snapped with a different feel. He had sustained nerve damage in the accident, and his fingers snapped with a different feel. He returned to a transformed organization. Kronje had confessed to match fixing, and Sean Pollock was given the captaincy. Adams took 3 expensive wickets in his comeback match, which ended in an innings defeat to Sri Lanka in Gaul. He'd played just 15 more tests and 11 one-day internationals over the next 4 years. They were highlights, 10 wickets in a match against Bangladesh and Chittagong, and a career-best 7 for 128 in defeat to Pakistan in Lahore. But the numbers point to a decline. Before his injury, he averaged under 30 with the ball. Afterwards, that number climbed above 40. The change of direction under new captain Graham Smith was an important factor. Unlike Kronje, Smith wanted his spinner to play a holding role so that he could rotate a battery of fast bowlers from the other end. Adams would pull the Protea over his head for the last time as a 27-year-old in March 2004. He claims he was still in peak form. The selectors disagreed. By 2008, he hung up his boots for good. He was 31, still young for a spinner. I wonder then, did we see the best of him?
Yeah, I always say later on I actually knew a little bit more about bowling and that age, but it was a stage of where I was very frustrated as a spinner. I had to find the means and ways to support my family. I had a young family then. I just had got married about a year and had a daughter. I found myself with no contract, you know, so I had to find the means and ways instead of struggling along with trying to still keep playing cricket and refocused myself and took myself into coaching.
Ahead of the 2012-2013 season, he became the youngest ever coach of a franchise when he was handed the reins of the Cape Cobras. As if mirroring his playing days, he found instant success before the wheels came off. He won 5 trophies in his first 3 seasons, but an aging squad was replenished with a new crop, and problems soon emerged. In 2016, the Cobras had their first title-barren season for 8 years, indicative of an unstable camp. Subsequently, 10 of the Cobras' 17 contracted players signed a letter stating their intention to strike if Paul was not removed as head coach. He stepped down, even though he had first received public support from the board.
It was very well reported in the media that a few players were wanting me not to be the coach anymore. And it was just the unfortunate of how it went. Probably through just lack of communication or understanding of where each group was wanting to move and do things. We found mutual where we had to move on.
Paul definitely still has a future in coaching. He could have gone possibly to a different franchise after that. And, you know, but when something like that happens, people are always going to ask questions. Will that happen here again? And will it happen by us? And that's kind of stifled his coaching career.
Paul was in the news again recently, speaking at Cricket South Africa's Social Justice and Nation Building Hearings, or the SJN. He recounted a particular incident in which he was subjected to racist abuse disguised as friendly banter by his teammates, including current national coach Mark Boucher.
I was called brown shit when I was playing often used to be a song that used to happen when we won a game and we were in fines meetings. They used to sing brown shit in the ring, tra-la-la-la-la. You know, so they would make the song up of it, but it's when you're playing for your country, when you're in that victory, you don't make sense of it. You just go along with it. You brush it off. But it's actually blatantly racism.
We'll unpack the SJN hearings in a future episode. But for now, let's end it with a reflection on his legacy as a player. I'll let Zahir sum that up.
I think obviously we'd like to see him as somebody that overcame real hardships, you know, initially in his life to go on and represent his country, and also the excitement that he gathered back then, you know, that he created back then. But unfortunately, it will be looked at as a career that wasn't fulfilled. Also, just a young man that loved the game and that was excited about what he did and really provided hope for a hell of a lot of other people. If you walk on if you go into the parking lots and the streets and you'll see kids still imitating his action. You know, it is still something that people do, that they want to bow like Jorge.
Well, if that isn't the measure of greatness, I'm not sure what is.
Shout for LBW. Oh, he's got him. That's well run. Or is it? Oh, upfield. That's out. That's got to be out. That's beautifully done.
What a great hit. That's unbelievable. It is sensational. Now, this will be interesting.
Short, fine legs.